Head to Subway for the tangy new Tuscan Chicken Melt, seasoned chicken, melted cheese, and olive vinaigrette. With 9 grams of fat, it's part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simpler way to enjoy eating better. Hurry in today. Subway. Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, welcome to the BS Report. Little unconventional today. I have to do this from a hotel room. I'm on the road. I'm traveling. I'm doing stuff. So I'm doing this from a hotel room phone instead of my usual excellent studio setup. But the good news is we have a great guest today. The Dallas Mavericks owner, the founder of HDNet, the owner of about 40 million different projects, the one, the only, Mr. Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban, what's happening? It's all good, Billy. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I was researching you today, and I didn't realize that you owned 57,000 different things. And I'm not going to list all of them, but narrow it down to, like, your top three.
Do you want me to include the things my wife buys or just businesses?
No. There's only 24 hours in a day. I don't understand how you run the Mavericks and do all this other stuff.
The big ones are the Mavs, obviously. Landmark Theaters, which is a national theater chain in 18 of the top 20 markets. HDNet, which is a dominant in mixed martial arts. Television network, we're dominant in concerts. Just call your local cable or satellite operator for listings. HDNet Movies, which features our sneak previews. A company called Files Anywhere, which does online backup. Ice Rocket, which is a real-time blog, Twitter search engine, MySpace search engine.
Hey.
Just invested in Naked Pizza, which is a healthy pizza chain. There's just a lot of stuff that I like to do. Synergy Sports, which is anybody who's big in the NBA behind the scenes is aware of that. So there's a bunch of stuff.
You left out the Mark Cuban stimulus plan.
Well, that's where Naked Pizza came from.
Okay.
And that's how I get my wife to buy. No, never mind.
Explain the Mark Cuban stimulus plan in 20 seconds.
The Mark Cuban stimulus plan. The economy is obviously has been rough on everybody. And, you know, as the government goes through all the different things that they're trying to do by spending more and more and more money, you know, who knows if it'll work? Who knows if it won't work? I mean, I don't think we'll know until after the fact. But what I do know is that what makes this country different is the entrepreneurial spirit that we have. That, you know, regardless of big businesses and what they do, there are millions of people across this country that have the energy, the sweat equity, and hopefully the idea is that when you match all those three pieces together, sometimes all you need is just a little push or a little bump. And so I wrote a blog post called the Mark Cuban Stimulus Plan, basically saying that if you've got a business that just needs a little bit of money to get you over the hump, you know, post it on the blog and either I'll look at it and potentially provide you the money, or somebody else might come along and look at it and provide you the money. And we had, you know, thousands of people post their ideas. And I've started to put some money into them. I put money into a company called Naked Pizza, like I mentioned earlier, which is a healthy pizza store that, you know, it really, I went out there to New Orleans when we played the Hornets, tried the pizza. It was great. And so I invested some money to help them grow their first store. And now that that's doing well, we're going to start expanding it beyond one to two to three and however many we can grow it to. And then, you know, there's been a bunch of other businesses that we're either in the process of doing due diligence on or are putting money in. There's one called Wickler, which is a kind of a deal that bars and restaurants use that automates the process of counting how many people are in the bar. So, you know, rather than having the fire marshals have to come by a popular bar, the fire marshals can just go online and look to see how many people are actually in. And it's got all these little, you know, bells and whistles. And, you know, these are the types of investments that weren't millions of dollars. I think in one case it was $50,000, another case it was $65,000, another one $40,000. You know, sometimes it doesn't take a lot of money to just get you your start. you know, and if I could, if I can get that ball rolling, I figure I can contribute as much to the country as anybody.
So if I want to start an NBA referee academy, you'd fund me?
You know, I think there's a huge opportunity there, but it ended up costing me more on the back end than the front end.
Yeah, you're, what are you at, like $1.7 million in fines this decade?
You know, I stopped keeping track. I don't even know.
It's the all-time record, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, there's nobody even close.
With all this stuff you're doing, somehow you manage to blog as well, which I don't get. I don't know how the blogging fits into this whole thing. And not only do you blog, but the blogs, the posts are actually very interesting. And like about a month ago, you wrote something about newspapers that in a very succinct way basically presented this new way for newspapers to continue to thrive, and it was kind of amazing. I don't know how you come up with this stuff. Like, do you just sit around all day and think, hey, I'm going to solve newspapers today?
No, you know, it's like, you know, what I do, or I think I do well anyways, is, you know, try to come look at what's happening in the business world and look at where my skill sets are and try to identify opportunities. And, you know, looking at industries that need help is one way to look for opportunities. And obviously the newspaper industry has its challenges. And so because they're so, you know, stuck in the mud in the way they've always done business, you know, I try to look there for opportunities. And, you know, some of the ideas are pretty straightforward. And it just, I write about them because it just to make people wonder, these are such simple ideas. Why hasn't the industry done them before? And so, the blog itself, you know, the interesting thing about the blog is I started it more than 5 years ago now. In response to a column in the Dallas Morning News, I had done an interview with Kevin Sherrington, who was Sherrington or Kalashaw? I forget. One of these guys in the Morning News who are good guys. And we had done this, you know, extensive email back and forth. And what started off as, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of words in an email interview turned into, you know, a slanted opinion piece that really just took out of context everything that I wrote in the emails. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, these blog things are pretty simple to set up. I'm going to show people exactly how the hot dogs are made and say, look, here's what the questions were, here's what my responses were, and here's a link to the actual column. And let people see how we went from point A to point B. And it was interesting. The response was interesting. And it made me realize that, you know, not only was it an opportunity for me to get things off of my chest, sometimes in code so I don't get fined by the NBA, but also it allowed me to kind of take my position in media and preempt media. So like way back when Steve Nash left the Mavs, obviously I knew it was going to create a lot of questions. And so rather than just responding to each question one at a time, one reporter at a time, I just wrote an extensive blog piece on exactly how everything went down. And, you know, it worked out so well that I just continued.
I remember that post, and I remember thinking at the time, wow, this is the internet is now taking sports in another direction, because instead of me reading a newspaper article or a column about why you let Steve Nash go, you just explained it to me. You bypassed the middleman. And now I think what we're seeing, especially with the advent of Twitter the last couple months and how players and whoever are using it, is people are more and more bypassing the middleman. Like, where do you see the coverage of sports going in the next 10 to 12 years now that this is happening?
Well, you know, it's something that happens to all media, and it's called fragmentation. The easier it is to publish, the easier it is for everybody to be publishers. And so when that happens, you get so many choices, it becomes very difficult for anyone to stand out. And in that environment, what actually happens is actually the opposite of what people expect. I think people expect the little guy to really have a voice and really have a say, and they point to the fact that there are millions of blogs and probably hundreds of thousands of sports-related blogs that people publish, and it gives them a voice. And while all that's true, the reality is, if you took the long tail of sports blogs, and then you remove the people reading the blogs they wrote themselves and their friends and family reading it, there really is very minimal external readership, which leads back to the major media companies being the dominant aggregators of sports information in the sports world. So ESPN and Fox and all the big names we've come to know, love, and hate continue to dominate. But the interesting thing is that sports media, while they still have the dominant voice, the big media companies, while they still have the dominant voice, they give too much credence to the little bloggers and Twitterers out there and overweight them in terms of value. So, you know, someone may do a search on Bill Simmons, like I know you do, like everybody does.
Because I don't.
What do you mean you don't?
I don't. I've made a rule like 2 years ago not to Google myself.
Not Googling yourself, but you don't do a Twitter search to see how people are responding to your comments.
Oh, that one. Mostly to see how they responded to a
post. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not a vanity in terms of what they think of you personally.
Yeah.
But more how they respond to your columns, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So when that happens, we tend to get this myopic view that these little guys who are responding to Mark Cuban, responding to Bill Simmons, have a bigger voice than they really do. And the big media responds to the little media in a disproportionate way.
And what's interesting is I think they're finally starting to realize that. I actually would call it the loud minority versus
yeah,
like
and it's
the
not
loud
even loud,
majority.
It's not loud in that everybody gets to hear them.
Yeah.
It's loud in that we hear them screaming in our ear and we respond to them.
Yeah, and if you, as you said, if you Google, you know, you're much more likely to see something negative written about whoever. Than
well, yeah, I'll pimp one of our products, IceRocket.com. So I go and every day I'll check and I'll put in Ice Rocket, and we have this feature called Big Buzz, and what it does is it shows me all references to Mark Cuban or M Cuban, which is my Twitter handle, as a result of a Twitter search, as a result of a blog search, and as a result of a news feed search, and as a result of a friend feed search. So anybody who's referencing me, for whatever reason, I get to see. The challenge is knowing how to assign real value to each of those sources.
Right.
You know, what's the authority of each of those? And, you know, now because of Ice Rocket, I'm able to understand, well, this guy only has 6 followers, so it doesn't matter what they tweet. This blogger has, you know, 3,000 readers, so, you know, maybe he's got some following and I'll pay attention. And that's really the challenge in media right now, what to pay attention to. You know, I'm a lightning rod for so many different things, but what's interesting is, you know, people will have a news alert, you know, people in the media will have a news alert with my name, and the minute some little guy tweets something, then they're asking me questions about it. And that's the part that's kind of disproportionate and out of hand, because you know, it's very difficult for traditional media, even though they have the strongest position in this fragmented environment, to really understand how to assign authority to different sources of information.
And 10 years ago, you were an anonymous guy, and now you're one of the more visible guys on the internet. And you're
it's crazy. I mean,
in real life and everywhere.
Yeah, all because of sports. You know, Tom Hicks said it best. Right when I bought the team, he said, "You know, Mark, you know, we both have businesses that have gotten covered weekly in the Wall Street Journal, you know, every week or two in the New York Times business section, but you have no idea how much scrutiny you're under until you get into the sports world."
Yeah, it's true.
And he's exactly right.
So when you bought the Mavericks, and I don't even think people remember this or realize this anymore, but you bought the team, I think, in the beginning of 2000.
Right, January 2000.
And you kind of reinvented the concept of an owner in professional sports. And early on, there was a lot of backlash to some of the stuff you were doing. You were called a self-promoter. I even think I took some shots at you.
Hey,
called a self-promoter. Always put yourself in the forefront. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You're spending money like crazy. But the reality was you took an approach to owning a team, and you turned it on its head. And now we're seeing teams, you know, owners do this more and more. Ultimately, I feel like, you really did some good. Like, do you feel proud of what's happened the last 9 years?
I mean,
or do you not think about it?
I went into it with two ideas in mind. One, you know, because I'd made money, I wasn't going to change. I was having fun when I was broke, and
yep.
There was no reason to change because my bank balance changed. I can just do more of the things I had fun at. And I was a Mavs season ticket holder, and I mean, I was one of those guys that was just screaming and hollering and yelling and, you know, screaming, you know, charge and screaming, you know, ghost. You know, I used to call Sean Bradley Stone Cold Sean Bradley. You know,
yeah.
Every time he, you know, blocked a shot or, you know, when I first got my season tickets, I didn't even have side-by-side seats. That's when we had Jason Kidd and Popeye Jones. You know, and Popeye Jones had a 20-20 game, and, you know, he got his 20th rebound, and me and my buddies were upstanding, up screaming MVP, MVP. you know, that's the way I was before I bought the team, and it just didn't seem logical to me that I was having so much fun. Why would I change it because I bought the team?
Yeah.
And that was part of it. And the second part was, you know, all I knew about business is what had worked for me. And despite the fact of everybody telling me that I should be different when I bought the sports teams, when I bought the Mavs, I just couldn't find a good reason to not go with what had worked for me. It had worked in every other business I'd ever been in. Why would I change because other people did it differently? I mean, everywhere I'd ever made money, it was because I was doing it differently. And so if it meant coming in and, you know, hiring, you know, seven guys to basically work individually with our younger players and having every other team laugh at me and calling them development coaches, well, to me it was stupid that they didn't do it before because we were paying these guys $1 million plus and we didn't have people working with them. They were, you know, when they got some coaches' attention, fine. If not, they would work on their own because they were quote-unquote professionals. But in every other business I'd ever been in, we'd have people who were making $15,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year that we were sending to training and spending more on training them how to run Excel and WordPerfect than we spent training, you know, professional basketball players that we paid millions of dollars to get better at their profession. So to me, it just never made any sense the way it had always been done. So there was no reason to do it that way. And if people liked it, fine. And if they didn't like it, that was their problem.
And I think the biggest impact that you've had in the league is that teams now say, well, why not? Why can't we spend $55,000 on this research project? Why can't we hire these two statisticians and see?
Well, yeah, I mean, what, you're here to win. And, you know, I remember walking in saying, look, my marginal value of every win was basically, you know, coming from where we were with the Mavericks, $500,000.
Yeah.
And so why wouldn't I do more things to win? Why wouldn't I spend more money to win? You know, why wouldn't, and then you start realizing the non-financial impacts of a sports team. You know, in a regular business world, I got lots of emails from people saying, you know, at broadcast.com how great it was to be able to listen to their alma mater basketball team no matter where they were in the world, and that was gratifying. But it's nothing compared to, you know, getting an email or a letter saying, hey, you know, would you mind if Dirk signed my son's jersey, that Dirk jersey that he had? He died of cancer and he wanted to be buried in it, you know, or can, you know, we used to get baby pictures, or my uncle, you know, hasn't missed a game in 15 years and he's got cancer. Would you send him a hat signed by the guys? The impact on people's lives, I just never, ever, ever anticipated it. And you know, you see it when the Mavs went to the finals. You see it in Orlando now. You see it in Denver. You see it in L.A., just the emotional impact a sports team can have. And, you know, just to be part of it, it's just an amazing experience. And I don't think that gets enough credit into the decision-making process. I think some owners still are too far removed from that. And to me, it's probably the most rewarding part of it, and it's something you really can't put a price on.
Yeah, it seems like some owners bought a team just because it was like buying a yacht or something. Oh, yeah, I bought a team.
I mean, all I can tell you is there's owners I don't ever see at the owners' meetings, and I can understand why in a lot of cases because of the politics of basketball, but at the same time, you know, I try to have as much an impact on the game behind the scenes, believe it or not, as I possibly can.
Yeah, but you would think that's what, I mean, why own a team? That's what I don't get about some of these guys. These guys buy a team, and then they're cutting
everybody's
costs.
Everybody's got their own reason, right? I mean, look, you don't get to the point where you can buy a team without having done something right. And so
you don't
really question it. Whatever their logic is, that's the logic, and more power to them.
Mm. Well, you and I are kindred spirits in the fact that, you know, I think when you entered the league, you looked at the job that an owner had, and you said, well, why can't it be this way? Why can't I try this? Why can't I do that? And I kind of feel that way about everything.
Right?
Especially like, you know, I had this, an admittedly tongue-in-cheek campaign to try to run the Bucks last year and the Timberwolves this year. I know I'm not going to get hired by an owner. Nobody's going to
do
that.
You never know.
Yeah,
I mean,
but at
look at baseball.
Time.
It happens all the time, right? Look at Vinny Del Negro.
Well, that is true. But, you know, my whole point was, well, why not? Like, why do we have to approach hiring a general manager a specific way and hire the same types of guys over and over again? Why couldn't we do it this way? Especially if you're a small market team, why wouldn't you want to hire somebody that could actually generate headlines and think a different way and take a chance with a job that fails.
Well, of course. I mean, do you know really that the Mavericks do not have an official general manager?
Really?
Not by title internally. Now, we have people that Donnie Nelson is, when it comes to the league, deemed our general manager, but that's not his title. We have an assistant general manager, Keith Grant, but we don't officially have a general manager because, to me, you know, that's the way the NBA has always done it, but there's no good reason to have someone who's just general about everything, right? You know,
yeah.
I want people who are good at certain things and pick the best person for the job, regardless of you know, the bucket that the NBA wants me to put them in.
Yeah, it's strange to me how resistant they are to change, whether it's with the referees or with the lottery system that, you know, you could point to copious amounts of evidence that the lottery system just doesn't work. All you're doing is sending the best possible players
to
the worst-run franchises.
Actually, the lottery system does work. It just doesn't work the way the worst teams want it to work. Because realize that even if you've got the number one pick or the most ping pong balls, I'm sorry, and that's what, 25%?
Right.
There's still a 75% chance you're not going to get the pick. And it's just that teams don't do the math going into the end of the season. You know,
yeah, but how does the lottery system, though, how does it make sense that the Nets, who have, you know, an equal amount of limited talent to, say, the Clippers,
uh-huh.
and they do a good job, and they put together a decent team, and they overachieve. The Clippers go the other way. They're terrible. They lose every game by 20 points. They antagonize their fans. They don't change anything. They make dumb trades, and yet they get rewarded with the number one pick. I don't see how that's a good system. Why are we rewarding bad teams?
Well, it's not that we're rewarding bad teams. It's just that bad organizations, and I'm not saying that the Clippers are a bad organization.
I know you can't, yeah.
Yeah, bad organizations make bad choices. And
right.
So there's no way you're going to fix that. That it just is what it is. Now, is there a better opportunity in terms of defining the lottery? Yeah, there probably are, and, you know, there's been a lot of discussion on other ways to do it, but, you know, it's still going to come down to whatever way you come up with, teams are going to try to game that system to get the best pick.
Well, where do you see, I wrote the No Benjamins Association column in February about how secretly bleak the economic landscape is looking for the league, and since that column went up, you know, a lot of facts have come out, and it looks maybe even bleaker. We've had some teams losing $35-40 million. Like,
yeah,
where do you see this going?
Well, I don't think it's any bleaker than people expected. It just didn't improve like teams budgeted for. And so I think we've actually held up pretty well. And, you know, the good news is our ratings on ESPN and TNT in particular are way, 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 way up, which builds excitement across the league, which generates jersey sales, which generates licensing and advertising partnerships. So I think we're, you know, in this type of economy where people kind of cocoon and go back to their comfort entertainment, which are sports and movies and those types of things, I think we're actually gaining market share, if you will, gaining mind share and gaining emotional attachment with particularly the playoffs as they go on now. So I think that's a positive. But, you know, teams are going to have to price down their tickets. I mean,
right.
you've heard me say multiple times, we started 4 years ago pricing down because, I knew there'd come a time when we'd suck. You know, we have, what, 950 win seasons in a row, which is crazy. But and hopefully it won't happen for a while, but there will come a time when we're terrible. And I don't want people to have the perception that going to a Mavs game is expensive. You know, so we have $2 tickets. We have $5 walk-up tickets. We've got 4,000 tickets every game priced at $19 or less. So that, you know, the perception is that it's inexpensive to go to a game. And I think other teams around the league are starting to realize that. Now, the net impact in terms of personnel is that there's going to be less money available for players. And it's going to be a really, really interesting off season because I think there's going to be some teams that have to readjust their spending levels to match their revenue levels, because not only do they have to deal with their own budgets and their own finances and the losses like you mentioned, but there's less money available from the larger market teams for them to go after for revenue sharing.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we're right around the corner from a new collective bargaining agreement. So, it's going to be an interesting summer. And, you know, since we've been kind of planning for this all along, you know, hopefully that creates opportunities for the Mavericks.
planning in the sense that you might have some money and some cap room to maybe do some stuff?
Yeah. I mean, we accelerated payroll when we did the Jason Kidd trade. We accelerated payroll a couple times before that. You know, and so we had a high payroll the past 2 years, but our payroll is going down the next couple of years. And so that opens the door for us to potentially do some things.
And you're in a unique position because, unlike a lot of these guys that own a team, you have a ton of money and a ton of other things going on.
Well, but, you know, everybody's gotten hit with the economy. I mean, me, everybody. So there's nobody that's been particularly immune. Some guys have gotten hurt worse than others. But no one's looking at this and saying, boy, I got lucky. I made a whole bunch of money. You know, I was short the market, and I just made a $1 billion killing. So I don't think there's anybody in that position. But at the same time, everybody's felt the pain, but some have felt it more than others.
But did you, for instance, 2008, 2009 season, did you lose money?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Are you on pace to lose money next season?
Next season, it'll depend on how our payroll clubs out. So if I take on salary from other teams, then I'll take an ass-whooping financially. But
at the same time, if you're going to take on salary, this would be the year because you're going to have some teams dumping, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
That could be interesting.
So, again, it really comes down to if I can absorb the heat via, you know, I've been lucky in that while I've taken a hit, I haven't taken a bad hit at all. I mean, it's actually minimal because, you know, I'm in the movie business, and the movie business is going through the roof right now.
Yeah.
You know, I made some smart investments when the stocks were down that, you know, knock on wood, have done all right. And so, you know, that's opened the door for me to be in a good position. You know, if the stock market all of a sudden turns sour, and, you know, who knows how that impacts me or everybody else. So, you know, there's still a lot of unanswered questions, but I guess the net of it is I tried to be positioned that we'd have money available now and going into 2010. Other teams have as well. And then on the flip side, there's other teams that didn't anticipate, and how could they, but didn't anticipate the economic downturn, and so they could be taking a much worse hit than they ever thought they would, and that could lead to them dumping players.
And on top of that, you have the cap going backwards. You have the tax going backwards. And
yeah, I don't think the cap goes backwards this year. The tax may go backwards a little bit because it's always 1 year removed. So what happens is that they anticipate the cap based off of some estimates, and then they adjust it the next year. So the cap will probably be about flat this year, and then it'll take a hit next year going into collective bargaining agreement.
And you have a ton of the free agent class is surprisingly deep. Like, it's not like the 2010 class where you have a couple franchises.
Well, exactly, and it'll be interesting to see on a couple fronts who opts out and who doesn't, which players don't get extensions but just sign qualifying offers, making them free agents next year. And so it's going to be really interesting, and I think the other piece that people haven't considered is because this year and next year lead into a new collective bargaining agreement, and with so many teams losing money, who knows what direction that can go, but you might see guys opt out just to sign contracts under this existing collective bargaining agreement.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, do you see there's been some talk like maybe the NBA shifts toward more like how Hollywood works, where there's a couple big money guys. Like, for instance, you make a movie, you make Valkyrie. Tom Cruise is going to get $20 million. The second lead's going to get...
Well, actually, in that movie, that's a bad example, because I think in that movie, he took scale and a percentage of profit and a percentage, and was actually the financier behind it. So,
all right, bad example. So third,
I get
movie.
Your point that, you know, you have one exception that you can pay anything. And to be honest with you, I have no idea what direction the collective bargaining is going to go.
No. Do you think there's a lockout?
I have no idea. I hope not.
If you had to bet, would you bet yes or no?
I'm not allowed to bet. I can't.
If you had to have
that.
A handshake bet, would you bet yes or no?
What's that?
If you had to bet a handshake bet, no money.
I don't know. I really, really don't know. It really comes down to the temperature in the room at the time that the negotiations go on, because, you know, if the stock market goes down further, you know, owners are going to be terrified. If it stays where it is right now, you know, we tend to act more like the general economy, where we're starting to see some optimism because we think the worst has already taken place. So it's really it'd be stupid to bet right now because it's way too early.
The owners and the people running the NBA seem to sense the gravity of it. Do you feel like the players sense the same gravity?
Not that I can sense, no.
How about the agents?
Yeah, they understand what's going on.
How about Billy Hunter and the union?
No idea. No idea.
Well, yeah, is this your first podcast?
Second? Second podcast.
Who took your podcast virginity?
I forget the guy's name, but it was right when podcasts first happened, and I went on to tell him that podcasts were going to be a waste of time.
It happened in the woods, and you don't remember what happened. you came on the podcast. I've been trying to get you on for a year, and Mark Stein says that you didn't want to come on mainly because you hate being on the phone, which I accept. That's a valid reason.
Yeah, and it's not so much I hate being on the phone. The honest answer is I'm just not a big fan of podcasts.
You're anti-podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that people don't listen to them. Obviously, people do, but it's just, you know, there's only a few of them, yours included, that have more than 10 people who listen to them. And so I always felt that if I'm going to try to be fair and objective, that I'd have to do a whole bunch of them.
Right.
You know, and so if I wasn't going to do them all, I wasn't going to do any.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, the reason you came on is because you have something going on this week that you wanted to get the message out. And because I've wanted to have you on for a year, I agreed to let you get that message out. HDNet, which, by the way, one of my favorite channels because you show concerts all the time.
Every Sunday from noon on, we show tons of concerts.
It's fantastic, especially if you have little kids, and especially like my little son who will watch really any form of music being played. And
oh, really?
With John Mayer, throw him in front of like some weird John Mayer concert. He's done for an hour. You asked the meal ticket of this channel, though, is the mixed martial arts.
Yeah,
really made an imprint there. And now all of a sudden, Time Warner is yanking it. And by the end of this month, barring some sort of miraculous intervention.
And we're still working with them, yeah.
You're gone from Time Warner unless you come to an agreement next week?
Yeah, this coming week, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, HDNet is rocking. I mean, we've more than doubled our subscribers every year of our existence. We're up past 15 million subs now. We dominate, you know, all mixed martial arts outside of the UFC. You know, we do more live MMA events than, you know, the rest of the world combined. I mean, if you're an MMA fan, then we've got everything from Fedor versus Arlovsky to the Dream Show with Mayhem Miller. You could even have seen Han Choi just decimate Jose Canseco. So we've got the best and we've got the lowest.
Right.
But we've got it all. And, you know, we've got the world's largest HD concert library. We play all Sunday long. We've got, you know, what we call Guys Night In, which is, you know, the cheesiest of all television, where we've got the hottest women in the hottest locations around the world. And we have a show, Vegas Confessions, where just like Taxi Cab Confessions from HBO, we set up in clubs in Vegas and let people tell all their wild Vegas stories, and it's just crazy. But the network is going gangbusters. I mean, we're 18 to 45 men, and people just love it. But Time Warner didn't quite see it that way. They wanted to cut a deal we couldn't pull off, and said, okay, if we can't do it, we're dropping you. And so I just wanted to get the message out there that if you like HDNet and HDNet movies and you're on Time Warner, you know, let them know. Call your local general manager in your local office and say, hey, I love HDNet. I love HDNet movies. I love the sneak previews. And let me jump in there. If you don't know what HDNet movies offers, we have great movies that have no commercial interruptions. We're not a premium channel. But we also have sneak previews. And what sneak previews are is that we'll show a movie the Wednesday before it's released in theaters, and we do it once a month. So this past Wednesday, we had on The Girlfriend Experience, the newest movie from Steven Soderbergh. And we do the same thing every month. So you can watch it Wednesday night on HDNet Movies, and if you like it that much, you can go see it in the theaters on Friday. And so it's unique. It's exclusive to HDNet Movies. But if you love what we do with the channels, call your local Time Warner office. If, you know, they can't see fit to take care of you, then there's Dish, there's Direct, there's Verizon, there's AT&T, there's RCN, different Time Warner communities, and let us know. And if you're still not getting any love, send me an email, mark@hd.net, and I'll help you out.
What about Comcast?
We're on Comcast, not in every city, though. So we just signed a deal this year with Comcast, and they're in the process of rolling us out. So we're in parts of Boston, most of Chicago, Denver, and all over the place. So city by city, they're rolling us out. They've really done us right.
The only reason I even knew about this was because I thought the fact that you could pay-per-view movies that haven't even been in the theater yet is awesome to me. I just love it.
Anybody with kids loves it.
Yeah, I have two kids under four. I don't want to go to the movies. I'm not going to pay a babysitter however many bucks so I can go see a two-hour movie. So, you know, I had seen Man on a Wire. And then last week we rented the Girlfriend Experience, which I really liked. And I emailed you about it. Yeah, I emailed you, and I was like, you know, I really like that movie. That was cool. I love the fact that we could just watch it in our house. And you were like, well, it's coming to an end. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? It's coming to an end. This is how movies should be. I should be able to rent current movies at my house. I like the way this is going, and I don't want it to end. So this bugs me, and I hope you solve the problem.
Well, I hope so, too. And you know, there's a good shot. A lot of the times these things come down to the last minute. We've had it with other distributors, so hopefully we'll figure it out. But the reality is they listen to their customers. And, you know, if enough fans out there of HDNet and HDNet movies like yourself email and call them and let them know they're upset, it'll change. And, I mean, they're even on Twitter. So if it's easier to Twitter, I think the guy is at AlexTWC, and you can Twitter him and let him know how you feel.
I might have to create a fake Twitter account for my little son. He's going to be furious about the John Mayer thing. I got to ask you, the last decade, you saw the streaming video thing coming and made an obscene amount of money from it. This decade, you saw the HD thing coming pretty early.
Yep.
Like at the forefront. What's next decade?
You know, you always go... I started in the technology business in the 80s when I was 3 years old. And, you know, you always go through these transitions. You know, what I got in when PCs were first getting started, and they were new and everybody was excited. Then it was local area networks, and they were new and everybody was excited. And then there was this lull of 5, 6, 7 years until the Internet really started to happen. Then the Internet took off. And I think right now we're in this lull period where the Internet has just become a very stable platform, and that's led to YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, you know, which are, they're just new applications. They're not new technology. And
yeah.
I think that's the transition we're going through right now, where we'll see more and more applications that can become ubiquitous, but they're basically just software. And it just means that we're, you know, things have just, we're getting used to things, that they're becoming a utility, which is great for the Internet. Now, in terms of what's the next thing, I don't think it's anywhere near the Internet. I mean, If I were telling a kid coming out of college what, or going into college actually, what they should study, you know, if you have it in you, I would be studying, you know, genetics and technology related to genetics, because, you know, your 4 year old and, you know, my 2.5 year old and 5 year old, you know, if we want to be able to see what their future is and as much as possible and to try to be proactive in managing their health and trying to optimize their opportunities. And I think technology is getting to the point and will evolve to the point where we'll have more and more information. And over the next 25 years, just like over the last 25 years, it'll be more technology geared towards personal health than anything. And so that's where the next big thing is.
Interesting. So you're saying technology has peaked from an entertainment standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, because now it's just a question of how much bandwidth you have available to you.
Mm.
We're not talking about doing anything new with technology for entertainment. We're just talking about waiting for the lanes to get faster so we can do more of the same.
Yeah. I see one thing potentially changing, and I don't know why I even thought of this or had this idea, but I could see a day, and I don't know whether it would be 25 years from now, 50 years from now, whatever, where they would sell these headphones. I mean, you know, these things you put over your eye, almost like, you know, like a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be able to basically rent the experience of sitting in row 3 midcourt of a Mavericks game.
Yeah, that's not hard to do. Technically, that's not hard to do. You know, so doing a panoramic video and sound and even getting that towards three-dimensional, technically it's not difficult to pull together. It's more a question of cost, size, and speed and bandwidth.
Right.
So, you know, the things that you see now, if you go to a 3D movie, you know, or even like the Mavs did a 3D game, a game versus the Clippers last year in 3D.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard to do. It was just a question of putting together the bandwidth and what the cost is. And just taking all that and giving you a front row seat to a Mavs game, but rather than it being in a theater live, putting it into a headphone to create a surround environment and eyeglasses isn't all that difficult. There's just not the bandwidth and processing power at a price that's reasonable yet.
But 20 years from now could happen.
What's that?
20 years from now it might happen.
Oh, it could happen sooner than that. It's just a question of cost. I mean, if I needed to, if someone said, okay, it's life or death, you needed to put it together now, for $1 million, you can put it together.
And do you see the televisions and that whole thing the pictures are getting better, the TVs are getting bigger.
Sure.
It seems like maybe there's some ground that could be broken there. Maybe.
Well, you know, but the problem is you run out of space in your home. And so what's happening is where you're seeing a lot of change, and that kind of triggered a thought, is out of home. So, you know, the Mavericks put up at the American Airlines Center, I think it's been 3 years now, it only cost us $1.2 million to put up this huge, huge video screen on the outside of the arena where people will go into Victory Plaza and watch games, watch highlights, or, you know, when we're on have a road playoff game, we'll show the games live there, and thousands of people will show up to watch it. At the new Cowboys Stadium, it's, I don't even know how big this thing is. It's just a ginormous 1080p.
It's like a million feet.
Yeah. I mean, we're putting in a new Jumbotron at the American Airlines Center for next season. But what we looked at before we settled on this one, which obviously had to be the biggest in the NBA or any arena-hung Jumbotron, but before that, we picked this one, we tried to design one where it was super skinny and two-sided and ran the full length of 94 feet of a basketball court.
Wow.
And so you'd be able to see either side of it and look up and see basically, you know, a super crisp replay of whatever and stats during the game. And then in the end zones, we'd have smaller boards for people who'd have to look across to see it. But it wasn't a question of could you design a board like that. The question was could you hold keep it up there so you could just suspend it without any risk, and that was the hard part.
That's fantastic.
Crazy. I mean, but you know, so what's happening now? We went through this whole digital phase of miniaturization, make it smaller, 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 faster, faster, faster. Now it's bigger, cheaper, and so all the Moore's Law of technology is allowing us to make these digital boards that are going in outdoor or large locations that are just going to be amazing.
I have an idea for you. I feel like since you gave me 40 minutes of podcast time, I'm going to give you an idea for a competitive advantage.
Uh-huh.
This is an idea that a reader sent me, and I've been thinking about it for a while because he was pointing out how Kevin Garnett was sitting on this Celtics bench on this little, like, 18-inch chair, basically, with his torn papillitis tendon. And he's crammed in between Big Baby and Kendrick Perkins. And these guys sit like this, crammed on the bench for 2 hours. Here's my idea. I think you go stadium seating for the Dallas home bench.
Wait. Where have you been for 10 years?
No, you blow out your courts. Like, you really, like, these guys are in big-ass comfortable chairs.
Where have you been for 10 years?
You have the comfortable chairs?
Are you kidding me? It was the first thing I did. We patented them.
How did I not know this?
Because no other team wanted to buy them. And the visitors didn't like them, so we only had them on the Mav side.
Really?
Yeah, they're adjustable. They're padded and they're adjustable.
See, I feel like that's a competitive advantage. If I'm an NBA player and I'm crammed in between these guys and I'm ice cold.
Oh no, there's no question about it. Look at the Mav seats. Look at a picture.
I'm going to check
the first thing I did, because I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing sitting on these fold-out chairs, basically.
I'm so disappointed. I thought I was going to blow you away with that one. So how many courtside seats did you get rid of to do that?
None.
What do you mean? You had to get rid of something.
No, because I designed them so that we had the same number, but the width wasn't the problem. Ours are a little bit wider. The key was their knees going up and down, so you had to adjust up and down.
Gotcha. What are you capable of in All-Star Weekend in February?
It's scary.
I mean, this is really like your show.
That's what I'm afraid of, though, because you know, it's scary what the expectations are. It's scary what I know, what I want to do. And it's scary that I'll have to work through the whole thing instead of enjoying it. But it's going to start off with a concert in my backyard. And we've talked to everybody from the Rolling Stones to Prince. And it'll be, you know, to kick off the weekend, just 100 people in my backyard. We did it for my buddy's 40th birthday. We had John Mellencamp and just 75 people partying in my backyard. And it was just like the best ever. And we did the same type of thing for my wedding reception where we had Sammy Hagar. And so we're figured, okay,
Sammy
we'll start
Hagar.
Off with what's that?
That's fantastic.
Oh, it was incredible. It was incredible because the only people who knew what was going to happen were me, my wife, and the people who set it up. And so we brought all these people to our wedding reception, and we had a little band playing 40 songs, and everybody was like, okay, what's this? And then we went up there and said, okay, now we have a special guest star. And then, you know, Sammy Hagar dives into I Can't Drive 55. And, you know, that was my wedding reception, which is pretty damn cool.
Was he wearing the Mavs jersey with the 55 on the back?
I don't know, because he brought so much Cabo Wabo tequila, I don't remember. I have to look at pictures.
So are you basically the host of 2010 All-Star Weekend or the unofficial host?
The unofficial host. The hostess with the most of that. I don't know. It's going to be interesting how we pull it all together. But
well, here's one piece of advice.
Sure.
I would say look at everything that happened in Vegas in 2007 and do the opposite.
No doubt. Well, Dallas is a different city, obviously.
Yeah. You know? No, I know.
But, yeah, I mean, the scary part is I think, you know, last year was tough because of the economy in Phoenix. And
yeah.
You know, Dallas and Texas have kind of weathered the storm a little better than most big cities. And so it's good, you know, if the economy perks up even a little bit, it could kind of be the launching point for kind of a reinvigorated attitude across the country, because the All-Star Weekend, I don't think everybody realizes, is the world's biggest party in the U.S.
Right.
By far.
Well, I'm already making my divorce plans, because the Super Bowl's in South Beach like 3 weeks before, followed by All-Star Weekend in Dallas, I don't mean to put pressure on you, but I don't see this being topped. And I think I am living in a one-bedroom apartment in West Hollywood like a week later.
Hey, I got a guest house you can stay at.
Yeah, that would be good. All right, Mark Cuban, good luck with the HDNet thing and everything else, and good luck this summer. Pilfering players from the other teams.
Hey, it's going to be an interesting summer, Bill.
All right, thanks for coming up.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Target percent off. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
That concludes, ends, finishes, wraps up another BS report. With all the talk about baseball, the upcoming football season, and hockey playoffs, Bill Simmons neglected to mention something which frankly cannot go unstated. Okay, here goes. For a limited time, hurry into Subway and enjoy the new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Lovely seasoned chicken, melted bubbly cheese with olive vinaigrette, piled so high with the crisp veggies you love on your choice of freshly baked bread. All that deliciousness with 9 grams of fat. It's part of a fresh fit meal.